Bruce DePriest, who is just tremendous when it comes to the weather, the way he analyzes everything. You understand it. And we were fortunate enough to get him to be with us here this morning. Bruce, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Brad, good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Well, I am fine. Boy, that voice comes pounding through, and I want and I want you to meet my new partner, Gary Byron, who has got quite a background. He was elected to the General Assembly and decided, I guess, that he'd like to come on the radio, and he is here with me.
Gary, good morning. How are you, sir?
Great. Good morning to you, Brad. Bruce. Bruce, I got Brad right next to me.
We got the two B's on the radio right now, Brad and Bruce.
How long has it been for you at Channel 3?
Well, this fall will be my 41st year.
Can you imagine? 41 years.
And he used to do...
Generally in this market, Charlie Bagley, good old Fairweather Charlie Bagley, hired me at the Travelers Weather Service in 1978. And that's when I started doing weather forecasts for radio in this market. You know, I had the honor to work with Bob Steele. And then also
so
Channel 3 with Hilton Satterley. I know.
Yeah. Do you stay in touch with Hilton?
You know, Hilton, I haven't heard from him in a long time. Last I heard, he was in Edmond, Oklahoma, outside of Oklahoma City, where his wife's family is from. He is from Midland, Texas, but last I heard, he is in Oklahoma. But it's been years since I've heard from Hilton, and I'm hoping all is well with him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in fact, when he was on... on FSB doing the weather in the 11 o'clock, Monday through Friday. You were doing weekends then, right?
Exactly. Weekends and some weekdays. I was all over the place schedule-wise, but Hilton and I were pretty much partners, and you know, we teamed up for about 20 years from 19...
Can you imagine?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. When he retired in 1998, it was 20 years I was working with Hilton.
My goodness. And now you've been chief meteorologist at FSB3. What does that mean? What does that entail when you are chief meteorologist?
That's a good question.
Well, generally speaking, the chief meteorologist, not in every case, does the evening shows, like the 5, the 6, and the 11. That's what I do right now. But I became the chief meteorologist for Channel 3 in 2002. When Hilton retired, mm-hmm. Miles Musial came in for a little while. He was the chief from 1998 to 2002, and then I stepped in 2002. But generally speaking, you know, I do the key forecasting. I'll go in the afternoon, do most of the forecasting. But, you know, I do consult with the other members, like Scott, Mark. You know, Mark and I work together in the afternoon, Mark Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
We got Mike Cameron, Melissa Cole. So while my forecast may be the main forecast, it's really a team effort.
Sure.
And I think a lot of it is, you know, just the fact that I have so much experience and been there a long time. I really don't know how the term chief meteorologist came to be, quite honestly. But it's an honor. You know, it's an honor. You know, I love weather forecasting. And I think, you know, after you're immersed in a certain climate, a certain state for such a long period of time, you become what I call an instinctive forecaster, where you can look at all the models and all the data, but then you say to yourself, I feel like this is what's going to happen.
Right, because you've been here for so long. Actually,
right.
You know something? That's a great statement. I feel like this is what's going to happen. That's why he's good.
Well, it's a combination of living here for so long and his background in meteorology.
Absolutely.
You had mentioned something a moment ago about how long you've been at FSB3. What do you attribute that to, particularly in the broadcasting landscape where somebody's at one station, you know, for a certain period of time, and then they move along to either another market altogether or a competing television station? But yet you've been a fixture at Channel 3.
Well, you know, that's true. You know, I've got the longest tenure, I guess, of any anchor that's worked at Channel 3 now. And I think part of it is I hate to move, whether it's you know, moving from house to house or from job to job. I don't like it. But evidently, there's something that's been working. You know, Channel 3 has been a great home for such a long period of time. I think being a nice guy does pay off.
Yeah.
I think working hard at the forecast does pay off, and being a good team member all pays off. So I think, you know, those have been some secrets to success for such a, you know, long period, four-decade career.
Did you ever think, Bruce, did you ever think that the weather would become so popular, I mean, more than ever before? I mean, you guys are number one up there, and you're at it all the time.
People tune into the news just for the weather,
just
actually.
For the weather.
Yes.
They do. You know, it's a huge responsibility. I take it very seriously. And when I sit back and think, oh, my gosh, you know, weather is such an important thing. And, you know, you're right. When a snowstorm comes along, the amount of people watching our news grows exponentially. It's a big responsibility. And, you know, back in the, you know, late 70s and 80s, you know, the only way that people can get the weather was, you know, by watching TV or listening to radio. And now, you know, it's social media. That's a huge thing. We do a lot of Facebook Lives, and, you know, we try to drive people to the newscast by using social media as well. So things have changed tremendously. But, yes, weather's tremendously popular. And the nice thing about it is that the technology has improved so much, not only with radar, but by how people do get weather forecasts now. You could be hiking in the highest mountain in northwestern Connecticut and have your cell phone with you and get a warning that a severe thunderstorm may be coming.
You know, that's a great point. And, you know, this isn't, being a meteorologist and forecasting the weather in Connecticut is not like forecasting the weather in Arizona, let's say. You know, where, hey, it's hot and humid, and tomorrow's going to be hot and humid, and the day after is going to be hot and humid. You know, in Connecticut, you really have, you've got the valley, you've got the mountains, you've got different areas of our small state that have different climates unto themselves. Like, for example, Litchfield County or along Long Island Sound. So, if you can, some of the challenges that you face, despite how long your tenure with as a meteorologist at FSB, just being a weather forecaster in the state of Connecticut.
Well, you know, weather forecasting is very humbling. No matter how many years I've been doing this, there's always a time when I'll go in the next day and say, what happened? What went wrong? You know, it's a learning experience. We can't be right all the time. You know, and it's, you know, you get on a streak where, wow, you're hitting a home run day after day after day, getting the temperature right and the storms right. But there comes a time when you say, wow, how did we end up with 12 inches of snow when I was forecasting 3? And it's, I've actually had worse.
Worse. And people must scream at you. You must hear
back
from people.
In 1983, we had Blizzard Gordy. I was on radio on WTIC saying, you know, we might get an inch or two. And then later on that afternoon, we were getting 4 inches an hour, and it ended up with 21 inches of snow.
But, can you imagine?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. That was tough going in the next day. But weather forecasting, you know, when you look at the atmosphere, and, you know, you talked about Connecticut, how small Connecticut is, but there's so many climate zones
exactly.
that we have to predict
yeah, absolutely.
For.
Absolutely.
You know, the Litchfield County is like the Berkshires. Southeastern Connecticut is like Rhode Island. And you have the Connecticut River Valley where you get a lot of heat and humidity that comes up the Connecticut River, you know, and gets pretty hot in the lower elevations. But, you know, weather forecasting is never going to become perfect until we can measure every part of the atmosphere. If we can measure every cubic foot of what's going on in the atmosphere, which is impossible to do because it's so big, and then we plug all that information into our computer models, which are getting better and better all the time, then we would come up with forecasts that are nearing perfect. But we can't. We can't measure. Sometimes we have to make guesses as to what's going on between, let's say, Hartford and New Haven. And if it's a bad guess, you know, you grid the data, if it's a bad guess, then that error gets magnified with time as you go out into the future. And that's just the nature of these powerful computer models, as strong and as fast as they are, the fastest computers in the world running our weather data. You know, you won't get perfect forecasts until we can measure more of the atmosphere and find out what's going on now.
You know, Bruce, one of the things, though, as far as you're concerned, you are someone that when you're on television, okay, and I watch you.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on television, you really, really know what you're saying and what you're doing. It comes across. And some of these other forecasters that I have seen don't. And I think this is one of the reasons that you are there and have been there for over 30 years and really are the leader. And it comes through. And I think this is one of the reasons that you do so well with the people. That's my own. That's nobody else's. That's how I feel.
Thank you, Brad. You know, a lot of people have come up to me over the years and said, Bruce, we like the way you present the weather because you don't try to scare anybody.
That's very true.
I don't like to do that.
That's right.
You know, I like to give people the information they need to help them plan their lives around the weather, but I really don't like to scare people into watching. It's not the right thing to do. And I like to keep things simple. I tell a lot of people, you know, whenever I have interns, I say, when things get really complicated, keep it simple. You don't have to start talking about real technical things. Just say, look, here's what's happening now. Here's where the storm is. Here's where it's going. And here's what you need to do. And ultimately, that is what we're here for, is to guide our viewers around the weather and just keep it simple so that they can understand it. Don't complicate matters. Don't panic them. They know what to do if you give them the right information.
And that's great advice. We're running out of time, but I've got two quick questions I've got to ask you.
Sure.
Number one, it was like 30 years ago yesterday, right, where there was some serious tornado through Connecticut. Can you talk very briefly about that? And then I've got one more question for you.
Sure. That was a tornado outbreak that was the last time we had what we call violent tornadoes in Connecticut. We all know what happened last May with the tornadoes in places like Hamden, New Haven, and portions of western Connecticut. But those were EF1 tornadoes on the enhanced Fujita scale. The ones back in 1989 were EF4. Those are violent tornadoes. The highest you can get is an EF5. We're talking about winds of 166 miles an hour or greater. And that storm basically started in New York State, west of Albany, where there was a 42-mile track tornado, and that same supercell moved right into northwestern Connecticut, Cornwall, Bantam, worked its way southward through Watertown, Waterbury, and eventually into Hamden and New Haven, where it caused the most damage. I mean, hundreds of structures were destroyed by that tornado. And before that, of course, in 1979, we had the Windsor Locks tornado. But here in Connecticut, we haven't had a tornado that strong since. Now, the one in Springfield that we had, I believe, back in 2011, that was an EF3, and we saw the kind of damage that caused.
Yeah, I remember that. It hit Wethersfield somewhere in the greater Hartford area. You know, and that kind of leads into my second question, and that is, you know, this is not only is it tornado season, but it's also hurricane season.
Yes.
And although you don't hear too much about hurricanes around here in, first of all, in Connecticut, and when we do, it's usually not in June or July. It's more like September or October, or late August, September. In October, do you have any indication through your the technology that you use that this is going to be a severe hurricane season here in the Northeast, or do you not have that information as of yet?
There is some information that we have. First of all, there's an El Nino that is in existence right now in the Pacific, and the El Nino, even though that's occurring way out in the Pacific, does cause. It's kind of a rippling effect. It does cause some shear in the Atlantic Ocean, the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico, which can sort of inhibit the development of tropical systems. But whether that sticks around all summer is, you know, hard to say. If that kind of goes away, then that inhibiting factor goes away. We also have to look at sea surface temperatures, and they're getting pretty warm. So, you know, that's a very difficult forecast because I go back to last year when right in the middle of the season, the National Hurricane Center sort of like downgraded what was going to happen for the rest of the season. And then, of course, we saw what happened. We had very devastating hurricanes.
Mm.
And even though we may have a less than active season, go back to Hurricane Andrew, for example. Hurricane Andrew, that season was was rather inactive. We didn't have a lot of hurricanes, but all it takes is one Category 4 or 5 hurricane to hit the United States mainland or any of the islands, and it's a devastating bad season. All it takes is one. The thing that we can't do a lot is that we might know that the conditions are there for a very active season, but where are they going to form? Yeah. Are they going to stay way out of the Atlantic Ocean and not bother anybody, or are they going to be closer to land and hit land? So a lot of times, too, the most difficult thing with forecasting tropical systems is when they rapidly intensify. That's a very hard thing for the National Hurricane Center to predict, or any forecaster,
is
rapid intensification.
Is there a link between a wet summer and a snowy winter, or is that just myth?
Well, you know, there might be a link, but there's probably not really enough data to say for sure. We have to keep in mind that weather records have not been kept long enough, like let's say 500 to 1,000 years, to get a really, really good correlation. You know, we might be able to draw some conclusions there, but I think we need more data, more years to really be able to have enough years to study and, you know, make correlations.
Bruce DePriest. Bruce, I'll tell you, this was very, very honorable of you to do this.
Oh, for me, too. This is great. It's a first for me, and I really thank you for having me on your program this morning.
Hey, no, it's our pleasure. And we're looking at hot and humid weather for the next several days, I notice, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to tone it down a little bit today. Then we got some showers and storms in the forecast for tonight. Some of those could be pretty heavy. But, you know, the nice thing is that we can look forward to a hot but beautiful weekend.
That's what counts,
there you
right?
Go. You made the day.
That's what's important.
You got that right. Bruce DePriest, Chief Meteorologist, WFSB Channel 3 out of Hartford. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Brad Davis Show in the morning. We can't thank you enough. Hopefully you'll be able to join us again sometime soon.
And I would love to. Gary, thank you. Brad, thank you. I hope you have a great day. And I look forward to the next time I'm on your program.